wanna have some fun, girl. Let's make it a night. Better yet, forever. Let's play in the fun world, where the colors shine bright. When we're together, shawty, be easy. Why do you tease me? You do it so effortless. Hope you're prepared for this, right? T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
The way you run ensemble keeps it 100, feeling like Rondo, smooth assist. Ooh, I'm happy that you exist. How could I move if you resist? I'll be right here on the dance floor greeting you with a kiss.
Today's Entrepreneurs Radio Show. I'm your co-host, J.R. Williams, alongside Michael Calloway. We have some excellent guests tonight and some terrific new music. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride on today's Entrepreneurs.
How you doing today?
I'm your co-host, Michael Calloway.
And I'm J.R. Williams.
Sorry about the technical difficulties earlier. We're changing over engineers right now, so just bear with us, bear with us. It's the first day with the new engineer and getting everything figured out.
How's it going?
How's it going out there, folks? We have a great show lined up for you tonight.
Who we got in the house tonight?
We have Judith Belmont, Kerry Roberts, John Greenberg, Malcolm Out Loud, and the notorious, infamous, famous Diamond Dallas Page.
Okay. Nice, nice lineup.
It's funny that we have Diamond Dallas Page, and he's a former wrestler, a three-time world champion. And I just, last night, two nights ago, I was watching a documentary about wrestling in the NWO. Okay. And how it was kind of like a sub company almost.
Oh, like a triple league or D3 to the pros, you know, where they get them going.
Yeah, not necessarily, but the same principle as far as being affiliate, almost like a sub entity of the same.
Less sponsored, less advertised type of.
I mean, they were almost like a group, a crew. Within the WCW, and they,
I got what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Okay. But they kind of had their own entity. It would almost be like, in music terms, if your independent label signed with the major label. It was like that.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it just was funny, and just to hear him talk about the business aspect of wrestling is something that I don't think anybody I know I'd never even thought about, or even, I mean,
oh, yeah, you're right.
They were talking about how they were packing up and going in vans, and the NWO really saved wrestling. It really
stayed on the road.
And the infusion of cash that came from the merchandise and all the just the new energy that was brought from it really saved wrestling.
Branding. You know, the movie The Wrestler, Mickey Rourke. I mean, it gave a little brief, you know, like you speak of merchandising, you know, I guess it showed what's going on as a wrestler gets a little older, perhaps.
Yep.
Because at the same time, of course, you have like the WWE where things are pretty glamorized, to say the least, you know, compared to, like you just mentioned, how they were on the road. The way they portrayed it was like, you know, it was like a stop overnight, set up your flip table, do some autographs, and yep, keep it moving.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was really interesting. I mean, it was almost like a traveling team.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's almost like a traveling sports team. It was the same players, the same characters, and it wasn't as choreographed as most people think it was. Like, there wasn't choreographed oohs and ahs. There wasn't. I mean, the fans dictated who they liked, and they kind of built the story around who the fans were going to. And it was great, actually. I mean, they were talking about how Hogan didn't. It was at the end of his career when he was pretty much about to fade out. Yeah. That's when the NWO came, and he came, which kept him in the picture for a few more years. And it was really a cool story.
I seen this guy, Ric Flair.
The Nature Boy Ric Flair, right? Yep.
Yeah, he's still wrestling.
He's still wrestling.
Guy, I can't believe it. I seen it not too long ago.
He's got to be in his easy early 50s, late 50s. Ric Flair is old. I wonder if we can Wikipedia Ric Flair and see how old he is.
But that's just, you know, like you said, it's just about the marketing, the rebranding of it, and you know, you keep it alive, and that, I mean, I don't like where wrestling's gone, obviously. You know, it's just now, I don't even know what you call it. It's like a soap opera.
I mean, it was always a soap opera then too. It's more of a play now, almost like a performance.
It was way more
of a performance.
I used to believe Rowdy Piper a little bit, or, you know, not believe them, but I mean, they were so much into their own themes. Jake the Snake, you know, this guy. Now the themes are so over the top. I guess that's what you could say. But
I mean, because you're pretty much at a point in all entertainment where, I mean, just about anything that's possible has been done.
Oh, yeah. No, you're
right. You know what I mean? Everything is basically recycled.
It is.
At this point.
It's just that it just looks a little different.
Sounds a little different.
It's a little different.
Yep.
Yeah. Right about that.
So what's going on out there, folks? Call in 888-429-5471. Skype us at BBS Radio 2. Once again, the call-in number, 888-429-5471. Skype us at BBS Radio 2.
What's the tweet again?
You can tweet me at, follow me on Twitter at MelCoreOnline. Let's chop it up. Let's chat up while we wait for our guests to call in. I mean, yeah, it was, that was interesting though. I mean, wrestling, they were talking about how, I mean, Vince McMahon, the whole company almost went belly up. And then, because there was two, you had the WWF and you had the WCW. And they were ran by two different people. I think the WCW was ran by Turner, if I'm not mistaken. And McMahon had the WWF. So it was always a competition. And then, I mean, it cost a lot to put on that show.
Absolutely.
The production cost they were talking about. And then they had to start airing more times a week to keep up with the other league. It was really, really, really cool.
I don't think they were traveling as much either, it seems. You know, it just seems like it was more of a televised thing. And
then?
Yeah, back then. Now it seems like they have more of a, you know, network set up with big arenas or whatever and stadiums where they can get around quick and get their things, you know, assembled for a show. It just seemed like back then everything, you know, as far as I remember, you just watched it on TV. Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant.
Oh yeah, it was definitely
one of those cities.
I think the episodes that were showed on TV were live though, or at least recorded at some event.
Usually it was more or less that same place, and if you weren't in that area, you hit.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It was just probably one or two places, but it was televised for us.
Yeah.
Now they come to your city. Set up shop, you know.
I mean, they have a lot more competition now too. You got to figure, back then it was just boxing. Now boxing's kind of died out. Now you have the mixed martial arts and the UFC and all that. So I mean, wrestling really died out. I mean, that new UFC and MMA stuff is huge now.
And that's, again, look at that. Look at what it took to get that where it is. You know, UFC, the marketing. You know, the obstacles they had to go through because of that sport being, you know, pretty much as brutal as it gets when it comes, you know, to some professional sports.
Yep.
So think about, you know, I just remember when it first came, they were protesting against it. It's, you know, it's too violent.
It's too violent.
You can't, you know, now. There's no denying
it's almost accepted. It's too popular.
It's Vegas oriented now.
Yep.
It's, you know what I mean? The fights are big time.
Yeah, that's it's almost like a similar rise.
So when we talk to some of our guests, you know, and just when we're talking about marketing and, you know, maybe just putting a tweak on an existing product you have or a service. These are some great examples, you know, when you talk about a whole industry, actually, you know, not just the products. So think about how much more effort that takes, you know, to rework that.
And that actually brings us to our first guest. Now, our first guest is Judith Belmont. She's a psychotherapist who deals in consulting and wellness training for the workplace, as well as personal emotional training. Okay. She's also the co-author of The Swiss Cheese Theory of Life. How to get through life's holes without getting stuck in them. Okay. So we'll find out what this is all about. Judith, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No problem. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So, Judith, why don't you tell us a little bit about your brand?
Well, I have a brand of my book, The Swiss Cheese Theory of Life, and then I also have my own personal brand, which is Emotional Wellness for Positive Living. And obviously they intertwine. But let me start with a book. The Swiss Cheese Theory of Life is how to get through life's holes without getting stuck in them. I'm a psychotherapist, and my co-author, Laura Scherer, is also a psychotherapist. And we have basically crystallized the 10 top self-help tips in our chapters in our book that can help people have a happier life.
Well, what's the first one or the main one?
The first one is fondue can never turn back into a block of cheese. So we use the cheese analogy, and we tie it to common issues that people are faced. One of the things that I find in my practice all the time is that people are constantly reworking the past. And so using that analogy, fondue can never turn back into a block of cheese. Well, that sounds like a no-brainer. You know, once it's melted, it's done. It's just like sawing sawdust. You can't do it anymore. Once the board is sawed, you can't put it back together. And but so many people live their lives in a way that they're trying to, you know, have the woulda, coulda, shouldas of the past, and if only I had done that. And they keep on trying to have a different outcome, even though the past never changes.
Now,
so
when
I know
was
you're
this
an entrepreneur.
Released?
This book was released in black and white print about 4 months ago, and just recently, in the past month, we released it in all full color. So there's color cartoons and text boxes and case examples, and it's all in full color, just to make it fun and whimsical, but also it's real serious stuff.
Where can people pick this book up?
Well, they can go on my site. There's the Swiss Cheese Theory of site website, and also just simply judybelmont.com, which is my personal emotional wellness website, and there's the link to my books. Basically, it is a fun way of really having some hands-on tips of how to have a better life. It's one thing to kind of know better, but it's another thing to actually get practical tips, and that's what the book offers. And then along with that, since I know you talk about how we build our brand, I have, for instance, I'm looking at my website right now, the Judy Belmont website. Along with my book, I also have a lot of self-help blogs. In fact, I was a guest blogger just today on lifehack.com about there's no do-overs, but there are second chances. So a lot of mental health tips, I guest blog, I have my own blog, I have little quizzes. I'm looking over here what I have at judybelmont.com. I have a take a humor inventory because people like to do things that they can interact with rather than just look at. I have a wellness quiz on there. And I think that's really important when you promote yourself is to be interactive so people can actually do something instead of just read.
For some of our listeners that are, you know, also authors, I just wanted to ask you from some of our previous guests that are here, do you have your book and other just in other formats, like that we have the e-books and the audio books?
Mm-hmm. I don't right now because it's still very new. And my mental health publisher that has also published other books that I have written, they are a small mental health publisher. So everything is really left up to them. This is not a self-published book. It's published by a mental health publisher. Oh, and gotcha. The problem with the book... to be in a format such as for Kindle, there's a lot of pictures in terms of cartoons. We had a cartoonist, we bought some cartoons from a cartoonist and then edited some of the faces. So it has a lot of figures all over. We have character chores of the Swiss Wiz, who offers wisdom, and the Swiss Cheese Fairy of Life, who offers nurturing, you're okay, I love you kind of thoughts. Positive affirmations. So that's sprinkled throughout the book, and the problem with pictures like that, you can't have them in a lot of those type of formats. Right now we don't, but there are some types of e-books that you can do. It's like a PDF, in which we do have, but we're not selling it like that.
Now, once again, we're talking to Judith Belmont. You can find her at judybelmont.com. Now, Judith, can you tell our listeners what exactly is an elevator pitch?
An elevator pitch is a very short one or two sentence pitch that crystallizes what you're all about. So, for instance, my pitch for the book is this book will teach you how to get through life's holes without getting stuck in them. So it's not a long, involved explanation because people don't have long attention spans and they don't really want to get a long, involved explanation. They just want to find something catchy that they can remember, and that's why it's very important to have something that's a little bit different.
You're absolutely right. How are you using this product to brand yourself?
Well, one of the ways that I'm trying to brand is by having... giveaways. One of the things that I have found very helpful is there's a lot of bloggers who have giveaways, and people love to get things for free, and it gives the book a whole bunch of exposure, plus I get a lot of reviews. So if you look on Amazon and look at the Swiss Cheese Theory of Life, I already have as of yesterday, 33 reviews, and I would say about 28 or so are from bloggers. You don't pay them to do it. You host a giveaway. So you get exposure, plus the book has gotten tremendous reviews. So you kind of killed two birds with one stone.
We were speaking about that last week as well, about blogging and, you know, the importance of it, and, you know, something we need to do ourselves here, just getting, you know, some type of chat room forum.
Speaking of that, because the more people feel involved, the better. And those giveaways are good. And also on my site, I don't have one up right now. I'm going to do another one in a couple of days, is they call it a sweepstakes. And once you get into a sweepstakes, which is basically a giveaway, and people for a few weeks they enter, and Wildfire Interactive is the program that I use for the sweepstakes. I think they're very reasonable and they're very good, and it's very easy to make an ad. You get a whole bunch of people from your email list, and you get a lot of people who get exposure to your book.
So
for each giveaway, say a few weeks that I am sponsoring what's called the sweepstakes, which is also then put into some of the sweepstakes sites, so you get all sorts of exposure, I get over 300 people who actually sign up for my site.
Wow.
So you keep on doing those giveaways, you know, you can really get a lot of exposure for people to actually get to look at your material.
Now, Judith, how has social media played a role?
Well, if we didn't have social media, I don't think anybody would hear about the book. I have, you know, initially when we put the book out, because it is a small mental health publisher, I'm not a well-known name, even though I am a member of the National Speaker Association. I do speak a lot. You know, I am not, you know, a household name, certainly. And so without social media, who's going to know about it? Because I'm not a famous author, and I am not, you know, on TV. Generally, I have been on TV a few times, but social media is really the way to go in this day and age. And between enlisting people to blog about your book and do reviews, plus doing guest blogs, for instance, my guest blog today on lifehack.org, they're a tremendous site. Basically, lifehack means, you know, hacking life and sort of, you know, hacking and plugging into life and figuring out how it all works and how to master it. And so I am basically a lifestyle communication blogger for them. And they have wonderful statistics. You can look at the statistics on Alexa. And so they are one of the most popular personal development blogs. So by posting on there and having some high-quality material that I'm writing, then you also get traffic back to your site and you build your brand. If that wasn't available with social media, I wouldn't be able to spread the word of my expertise, which is emotional wellness for positive living.
What would be the best single idea that one can use to promote their brand?
I think the best idea is to have a really good website, because social media now is so important that if you don't have a good website, no matter what you do, people are going to want to follow you and find out more about you. And if you have a very poorly constructed website, and I know what that's like because I had one. It looked okay, but it wasn't updated enough because I didn't know how to do Joomla. So I had a very good web designer change everything into a WordPress format, which most people do have, but I just didn't have until just recently. And now it's updated all the time. And I have a lot of plugins like my Emotional Wellness for Positive Living Facebook page. So someone easily can go right to my website and then click on the Facebook page. They can click on my LinkedIn. They can click on their LinkedIn or their Facebook if they like with my blog posts. So I would say have a really good website that's interactive, that has a lot of plugins.
Gotcha.
So how many books have you authored?
This is my fourth book. One is a self-published book, which is a life skills manual that has been used in corporate wellness training and also with clients and people in general who are interested in self-help. But my major books that are published by the mental health publisher is 80. It's basically books for therapists and trainers and people who lead groups. And they're actually the number one and number two bestseller for my mental health publisher. And they have hundreds of books in their bookstore because they offer practical tips and tools for the therapeutic toolbox and group activities and tips. So they're all basically hands-on life skills. And the Swiss Cheese Theory of Life is the first what they call crossover book that's really for the general public. Anybody who's interested in being happier, and who isn't interested in having a happier, more productive life?
Well, Judith, once again, we're speaking with Judith Belmont. You can find her at www.judybelmont.com. I want to thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Really good.
You're welcome. I enjoyed talking to you.
And
thank you for your interest.
We wish you all the best. And once again, where can people find your books and your work?
Well, simply if you go on judybelmont.com, you can look at some of my blogs and my best guest blog posts. And then there's a book there. It's being sold on Amazon. It's still pretty new. We haven't gotten the bookstore yet because it is a small mental health publisher. So I would say online is the best way right now. And actually, on my site, if you put the coupon code SWISS, you get 15% off. And you could also download the first two chapters to get a sense of if it's the kind of book that's up your alley.
Okay. So you can download the first two chapters for free?
Uh-huh. Right. It says join the email list and get two free chapters.
Okay. Well, Judith, once again, thank you for coming on the show, and we wish you the best.
Take care.
Thank you so much. And I wish you the best, too. And good luck with your show. Bye-bye.
Good information.
Once again, that was Judith Belmont. You can find her at www.judybelmont.com. She was real good.
Branding.
Nice author. She dealt with a lot of wellness, emotional wellness, and that's important. You know, it's funny because I actually took a class in college called Recreation 101, right? My freshman year. You know how you take a couple just classes so you can get transitioned.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? From high school to college and stuff. So I'm taking Recreation 101, and it was actually the study of recreation and leisure, and it was basically generalized around the idea that if you don't have enough recreation and leisure in your life, you're not living a healthy life.
Oh yeah.
And it was really breaking down how it can affect you, and it was an interesting thing, and it was really almost, I think, for gym teachers who wanted to go along that line of the profession. But
no, absolutely. I mean, just think about the the studies. Just think about the studies that they've done just for doing a smile. You know, make yourself smile a couple times per day. It makes your life that much better. Or it makes your attitude, we'll say. I don't know about life, but as long as you have a good attitude, you have less chance for heart disease or, you know, any of those type of
activities.
Yeah, well, threats, rather.
Yeah. Well, that actually brings us into our next guest. Our next guest is Carrie Roberts. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing a little bit of technical difficulties. We are working with a new engineer today. This is our first time working with our new engineer, so certain things were not going as smoothly as planned. But once again, our next guest is Carrie Roberts. Carrie Roberts is the CEO of a company called ForTheCharitableCommunity.com. Once again, that is ForTheCharitableCommunity.com. She is a successful engineer. She's a successful entrepreneur who also assists in fundraising, mentoring, grant writing, and capacity training. Carrie, welcome to the show.
Good evening. Thank you.
Hi, Carrie.
I've never been called an engineer before.
I'm sorry about that, Carrie.
Add something to the
reference. It's okay.
So Carrie, tell us a little bit about ForTheCharitableCommunity.com.
ForTheCharitableCommunity.com is a support organization. We're working hard to support the nonprofits in our community, providing training, networking, and support for folks that are working in their communities, providing services for folks. So we do a lot of trainings, a lot of webinars, and providing cutting-edge, current, responsive training to what's going on in, you know, community, helping folks where they're at. And today's downside economy, folks need a lot of help, and nonprofits are very susceptible to the change in the economy, so we're there shoring them up and supporting them.
I don't know if you were Is this a local venture we wanted to know? Or is this like a
national... Is this a local venture?
Yeah, or is it like a national...
Well, through the miracle of webinars and internet, we're able to have a pretty far-reaching appeal. I am located in Southern California, so I do a lot of work in Southern California, but I do training throughout the country. So it is not just a local venture. It is all over the country.
So you can help people because with their nonprofits, with their nonprofits from all over the country. Correct?
Absolutely. We do webinars every week. We do free training webinars every week. We're going to be doing a great new teleseminar called Fearless Fundraising, helping people to confront their fear of asking folks for money. We're going to be doing that through a Ustream video feed, as well as hoping to take that on the road and do that live. And we're going to do some coaching. So, yeah, we're trying to embrace social media and reach as many people as we can.
Now, talk to us about the Fearless Fundraising. That was interesting. And why do you think most people have a fear of asking for money?
Because I think that it's just people really feel like it's just politically incorrect to ask for money. You know, I mean, if you go to any sort of church or a synagogue or a temple or a mosque, you know, people know that you're going to go there and they're going to approach you for funding, right? I mean, 50% of all the money that comes into the nonprofit sector goes to religious organizations. And we know why. We know why, because it goes to faith-based organizations and they ask for money up front. The rest of us seem to have a hard time. We are really great about promoting our programs. We'll tell you everything we know about feeding the kids and our after-school tutoring. But then when it starts coming around to, but we need money to support the net initiatives, we sort of clam up and we don't want to ask people for money. And board of directors, folks are scared to ask their friends for money. And we have to get past that because... 90% of all the money that comes into nonprofits comes from individuals. And only 10% comes from foundations and corporations. So we really got to engage people in how they can confront their fear and move past that and successfully ask folks for money.
That's a very interesting stat you just gave. Now, what do you think about, do you collaborate with any other non-profit organizations? And what do you think about the serious nature of why people need to collaborate with each other?
I think collaboration is key. I mean, and I think that we collaborate with lots of nonprofits. We collaborate with foundations and community organizations that are providing training. I think that there's sort of this mentality of scarcity out there, that people feel that they can't collaborate. And in my sense is that people, and that's one of the reasons that we actually have our networking seminars, to bring people together. Because if nonprofits can actually collaborate together, they're stronger. And they can provide more services to more people. And instead of working in an environment of scarcity, we can work in an environment of sharing resources and supporting each other. I think we can get more done and we can be more powerful in what we're providing to our clients.
It seems like a lot of money that's given, like you mentioned, like, I mean, it's private, but also it seems to be like a membership-based things, you know, like for fraternities and alumni, for instance. You know, if you weren't a part of this organization, then it seems like people are more... it seems a little harder for them to want to give you money, you know, if they don't really know what it's about or if they don't relate to your organization.
Absolutely. And you have to build those linkages. You're absolutely right. And somebody is not just going to off the street give you money for your symphony or for your food bank. Absolutely. You have to build your cause. You have to have a call to action. And you have to link this with an interest of this. So, absolutely. People are going to give to their alma mater. They're going to give to a hospital. They're going to give to places that they're linked into, their fraternities, sororities, those places. But the rest of the organizations, there's no reason why they can't build their cause and link speak with people and build their interest and get people to donate. There's no reason why they can't. They just have to do it. And there are ways to do that effectively.
Your website's an excellent idea, like you said, just for letting organizations network together. You know, I'm sure you must have some type of forum or different categories, obviously, from which people are going to, you know, find what they're looking for. But I think that's just a great method of allowing people of the same interests and, you know, and organizational needs to be able to link up and connect in one particular forum that's dedicated to them.
Yes. And the other thing that we have that's really key is we're going to have a hypnotist who's going to work with people on their fear issue. So we're going to get really down deep and get rid of that fear, you know, because fear of public speaking is like what, number one or two or something up there really high? So fear of asking for money, I think, is way up there too. So we'll get rid of that fear, and then we'll also give people some tips and techniques and something to take place of that. Because it's one thing to get rid of it, but if you don't have anything to actually take place of it, then what's the good of it? So I'm really excited about this.
Now, what made you want to get into this line of work?
Well, you know, I've always been involved in the nonprofit sector. I've been, ever since I graduated from college, I've been working with nonprofits. I started working at a women's shelter, and I've always sort of done this work. I actually worked frontline work, and I found out really hard answering the phones, taking in the crisis calls, that I really didn't want to do that. That was really hard work. And if I could raise money and help folks support what they were doing, which not everybody can do, then I could support the work they were doing and help out, but not have to do the frontline work. And I really honor the people that are on the street, in the trench, doing that work. But I, you know, try to stay in the background providing support for those folks.
Yeah, that's
and there's a need for it.
Yeah, that's a great thing that you're doing, huh? To provide those outlets and those platforms for people, because a lot of times people don't know where to go to find the information that they're looking for.
Because there are a lot of people that want to give money to, you know, different organizations, but just don't have the necessary information, you know, what they're looking for.
Now, Carrie, are you someone that if, let's say, one of our listeners was interested in starting a nonprofit organization, is that something that your site can help them with?
Yes. I've put together many nonprofit organizations because there's paperwork and things that need to happen procedurally, and we can walk people through that for sure.
Okay. Well, once again, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking to Carrie Roberts. Carrie, I want to thank you for coming on to the show and being a guest with us. And if you can just give your final parting shots and your contact information one more time.
Absolutely. I would just encourage everyone to get involved with your local nonprofits. If you're not, you know, someone who's working with one, support those around you. My name again, Carrie Roberts. Our website is forthecharitablecommunity.com. And I encourage people to take a look and see what we've got to offer.
Thank you very much for the work that you're doing, Carrie.
Thank you.
Right. Have a good night.
Well, that was Carrie Roberts. Call us in, folks, 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471. Why don't we play a couple songs, go to break, and we'll be back on the B-side.
All right.
Radio Raheem Devon. Yeah. Let's get to it. Or praying on the weed. Some people need prescriptions. Some even lose the eat. You can see it in a smile, an expression when a teardrop falls. Even hear it in a whisper. Yeah, in a late night phone call. It could be adoring, it could be endearing. Or love can be a bitch and fuck it back. We can even get the lines crossed sometimes. Mistaking it for the best sex we ever had. Some say, hey, it's the one, the one that got away. It's funny how a four-letter word is so complicated, but so meaningful to say.
Something about it's beautiful.
Talking about love, yeah.
The lessons in the irony
of it all.
The pleasure of the uncertainty.
That's how we procreated, yeah.
The way we seem to want and need
for
it.
I believe that it's internal courage to walk away. I believe that it's spiritual. Thy will to bow our heads and pray. A metaphor of kinetic energy. The signs will never prove. And it's true about what they say. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. And if it's the color red, hey, color red, and shape of a heart. And if it's all we need, then we're all we got. So say, it's an action, the things we do, not the words we say. And there's no wealth like being rich with love. So touch it, feel it, taste it. Still something about it is beautiful, yeah. The lessons in the for all the wrong reasons.
I suppose
that just makes us human.
Cause
we all need something to believe in.
There's
something about this thing called love that's beautiful.
The lessons in the irony.
The blessings
of love.
The pleasure of the birds.
The pleasure
of the birds and bees. And making love.
Little piece of heaven. That's what you are to me.
That's what you are to me.
That's what you are.
No matter the weather,
you shine bright for all to see.
So bright for all to see.
The peace of heaven with me. When I'm on my grind and I'm looking my tail off. Wishing we could sail off, but the distant lands where we could just relax.
Just relax.
Cause you always hold me down and got my back.
You're my little piece of heaven.
That's what you are to me.
That's what you are
to me.
That's what you are.
No matter the weather, you shine bright for all to see. Queen, cause you know that you're supposed to know how to
to treat your king. And never worry about them jokers. Cause you know, like I know, what we got is real. And what God has put together, no man can steal.
Can make it feel like
heaven, 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 heaven.
Welcome back to the Today's Entrepreneurs Radio Show. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, we are having just slight technical difficulties. This is our first day with our new engineer, so just bear with us. You know, this brings us right into our next guest. I am your co-host, Michael Calloway.
And I'm J.R. Williams.
And our next guest is John Greenberg. John is a sports expert, and he's also the author of The Grand Old Man, Amos Alonzo Stagg.
Amos Alonzo Stagg. John, how you doing? You with us?
For having me on your show.
No problem. Thank you for coming on and being our guest. Hold on 1 second here. John. I'm just going to pass the mic to my co-host.
John, when you say that you're a sports expert, what sports are you referring to?
Well, I'm referring to all the major sports in this country. Of course, I don't hold myself to be an expert in sports like cricket or anything like that, but all of the major sports that the public follows in this country, football especially, basketball, Major League Baseball, boxing, hockey, you know, pretty much you name it, anything that's played in this country and shown on this country on television, I'm pretty conversant in.
We were talking earlier, we said we were going to ask you how familiar you are with like UFC, for instance.
University of Southern California? UFC, Ultimate Fight Competition.
Yes. That's correct. Are you, is that of any interest to you? Or?
Of course it is, because that's basically an offshoot of boxing.
Okay.
And in many respects, the UFC, or just calling it mixed martial arts, MMA, has taken over from boxing, because there are no American heavyweight champions anymore.
And that's exactly what we were saying earlier with, between ourselves. But, you know, I guess that begs to be differed. But, you know, same thing. We were figuring, you know, the boxing matches, well, the ones you want to see are, you know, not there's too much bureaucracy and red tape and, you know.
Well, there's a lot of factors involved, and I was fortunate to have known Angelo Dundee, the late great trainer of Muhammad Ali and George Foreman and Carmen Basilio and several other people, Sugar Ray Leonard, and I was at his funeral. He passed away, and he was living in an assisted living facility in Palm Harbor, Florida. I live in the Tampa Bay area, so I happened to be there, and Muhammad Ali even showed up for the funeral. But the point Angelo Dundee always made was that what it's going to take is for a heavyweight champion to emerge in all of the major cities in this country. You know, the really top 10 cities, and then there's going to be a chance that we can see an American heavyweight champion. But right now, the public, they just don't know the fighters. And this is the advantage that a UFC is gaining on boxing, is that the public, they know those fighters because they're accessible to them. And now you've got Gina Carano. She's made a movie that's been very successful, so they're branching off into other fields as the people are actually getting to know these people.
Yeah. Well, John, talk to us about your book, the Grand Old Man, the Amos.
Well,
Alonzo
the Grand
Stag.
Old Man, Amos Alonzo Stag, for the benefit of the listeners, he is basically somebody that everybody should know about because he's the man who was instrumental in the way sports are perceived in America. He was born in 1862 and he died in 1965. He was 102 years old. He coached until he was 98 years of age. He started coaching in 1890. He was one of the greatest baseball players of his time. He was on the very first All-American football team. He was one of the founders of basketball. He is in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame as one of the founders of basketball. He invented the two-on-one fast break. And Stag was also instrumental in the U.S. Becoming part of the Olympics. And also he was a great tennis player and he was a great golfer. He helped found the Olympia Fields Country Club, which hosted the U.S. Open about 9 years ago. So we're talking about a man who was a great sportsman. And not only that, he was the one that came up with a playbook. He was the one that held coaching seminars during the summertime so that all these high school and college coaches could come in and they could learn of the way to organize a great program. And he mentored so many legendary coaches in their own right. He mentored the man Hugo Bezdek, who played for him. Hugo Bezdek went on to basically start the football program at Penn State. Rockne mentored Knute Rockne. Stag mentored Knute Rockne. He helped James Naismith. He actually got James Naismith his job at the University of Kansas, and now James Naismith is credited as being the man that started the legacy that is now being kept going at the University of Kansas in basketball. So he touched all the bases, and he was an exemplary individual. He was a concrete example of what a man should be, of what a coach, a teacher, a husband, a father should be. And for that reason alone, people should know about him. And if you understand him, then you understand what the purpose of athletic competition is. And he viewed it as a way of teaching the golden rule to people. Do unto others the way you would have them do unto you. And that's basically the essence of sportsmanship.
Absolutely.
And he also believed that all of these organizations should be primarily interested in the welfare of the participants, the athletes. And, you know, today we've got a lot of problems going on. because now the NFL has got all these lawsuits because of concussions, and in college football you've got certain instability because you got these conferences forming up basically to get television revenue.
And everything's changing.
And they got another, a lot of factors like that. Boxing, they've never had an actual league of boxers. This is a huge advantage that the UFC has, is that they have an actual league. You know,
but
so there's so many. And then UFC, I happen to have a conversation with one of the leaders of the MMA league, and they were telling me that they're campaigning against bullying. So they're reaching out, and they're becoming part of the community. And this is something that some of these other professional sports leagues, they haven't really been, they're not as visible as the MMA is. The MMA is starting to steal their thunder, and I think they're going to be around, and I think that there's definitely room for them in the sporting landscape. And as far as pay-per-view sports go, I think the MMA is pretty much going to wind up dominating that.
Yeah, it probably will end up dominating. Now, John, the only other coach I can think of with that long of a tenure would have to be Joe Paterno.
He was close. Let's put it this way. I mean, we're talking about the grand old man coached from 1890 through 1958. So, you know, Joe Paterno, he's a great, great man, and he did a tremendous job at Penn State. And the way you judge a coach is by what his players looked like 20 years after they played for him, as far as their career and what type of contributions they made to mankind. And Paterno would certainly rank way up there. And it is very, very sad that his legacy was tainted by Paterno's involvement with this Jerry Sandusky, who was alleged to have committed such just absolutely horrible acts.
Probably led to his deterioration at the very end, I'm sure.
Oh,
just
I'm sure
dealing with that.
It broke the man's heart. It literally broke his heart, because we're talking about Sandusky, who was recruited by Paterno, played for Paterno, was a integral part of the success of the Nittany Lions, linebacker university. That was all because of Jerry Sandusky, and it just goes to show that these predatory sex offenders, they can dupe anybody.
Definitely.
You know.
Now, what do you think Amos Stagg, his legacy is in college and pro football?
Well, I think quite frankly, his legacy is the basic cornerstone of college football. You know, if you go down to the College Football Hall of Fame, it's in South Bend, Indiana. It's going to be relocated to Atlanta, Georgia. You know, you get the sense, you walk in, there's a big mural on the wall of the front part of it, and Amos Alonzo Stagg is right up there at the top. And when Paterno's name was taken off the trophy for the winner of the Big Ten championship game, I was got a call from a radio station up in Ann Arbor, and they were asking me what I thought about the idea of renaming that trophy the Stagg Yost Trophy rather than the Stagg Paterno Trophy in commemoration of Fielding Yost. You know, Fielding Yost, he had an awful lot to do about the emergence of the Big Ten conferences. Arguably, the standard by which all college conferences are judged when it comes to athletic competition, and Joe Paterno is a great coach. He was in that long line of coaches that benefited from the grand old man's efforts, and Fielding Yost and Knute Rockne and all that. If it wasn't for the grand old man, we wouldn't have a Super Bowl. He fought for 10 years to get the forward pass accepted by the Rules Committee, which was based on the East Coast. He even had to have the help of President Theodore Roosevelt for about three years to get that through. So if you didn't have the forward pass, what will we have? It's doubtful that that we would have a Super Bowl. It's doubtful that professional football would have gotten to the prominence that it has.
Yeah, it could have even possibly folded by now without the forward pass.
You know, Stagg was always, a lot of people said that he was against pro football. It's really not the case. He was against the way pro football was operated prior to the mid-1930s. And he said himself that once it has a great chance in the big cities, but there's got to be people behind it with enough money to keep it going and operating at a first-class level. And in the beginning, they didn't have that. And they were literally going out to high schools and signing kids and asking them to play under assumed names for a few dollars. And, of course, then they would lose their eligibility if they were found out. But that was the way pro football was operating, right after World War One and into the 1920s. And people didn't take pro football seriously until Red Grange signed with the Chicago Bears, and then he was considered a freak because still today, you know, they took a survey a few years ago about the greatest 100 players in the history of pro football, and Red Grange was way up there, you know.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people say that's the whole thing about, you're mentioning MMA. What they need is somebody like a Red Grange, you know, somebody like a Wilt Chamberlain, somebody that is larger than life, that can go out and captivate the public. And I think they're going to, you know, they're going to get it.
Yeah, you're right.
Somebody that's going to rise to that status.
They'll definitely get it. I mean, they're fairly new, so give it some time. I guess we all we all start off at the same place. Now, once again, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to John Greenberg. He's a sports expert and the author of The Grand Old Man, Amos Alonzo Stagg. John, can you just give your final parting shots and your contact information one more time?
Yes, so they can get in touch with me at Greenberg John. That's one word, G-R-E-E-N-B-U-R-G, John, at yahoo.com. That's Greenberg John at yahoo.com, and they can get autographed copies of The Grand Old Man for $18.95. That includes shipping and handling and everything.
Okay, John, well, thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate it and wish you all the success with your book. I'm going to pick that up.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and it's always going to be a pleasure to talk to you.
All right, John.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Very knowledgeable.
Very knowledgeable. I'm definitely going to go to that site and grab that book, The Grand Old Man, Amos Alonzo Stagg, by sports expert John Greenberg. Let's play a couple more songs, and we'll be back on the B-side.
All right.
Girl, let me tell you, well, you're the very best part of me. Cause girl, before you, it was just me and my puppy and my music. And sometimes I get so lonely, I met you at the lodge, just about where it's at. But everybody knows the drink's strong. Jose Cuervo, the brass band played while we made our bodies rock. And then we walked and talked on the riverfront all night long. It's on New Orleans like Bourbon Street. My cafe du monde always so sweet. And you're my fleur de lis, I'm your black and gold. Cause girl, you know I'm feeling you in your Crescent City soul. So
I'm in the French Quarter's mouth. Yeah. And they had this little light skin thing. She was bad. Like foreign bad. Like I know she wasn't from America.
She was at the French Market, I'm walking by, her back was to me, her hair really caught my eye. You know that wavy jet black long and all hers, she's an aphrodisiac, not oysters, with her fleur de lis dress on. First thing you ask any woman's a question, how you doing baby, or something just like it. You look kinda cool and I'm looking for a sidekick to go to the Saints game, chill on the lake, hit the quarters and get drinks. Baby face but a body like she 26. We took a long walk, picked up some crawfish. She worked at Target, got her own apartment, telling me about her life, I wanna be a part of it. Girl, let's get inside before it get cold.
Cause on New Orleans like good, the rest of the city. My cafe do want all be so sweet. And you're my fleur de lis, I'm your black and rose. Cause girl, you know I'm feeling you in your Crescent City. So, 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 you never get so, no, 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 no,
no. Yeah, you grooving with the sounds of Suave. Yeah, Focus. And we just two Crescent City boys who love the Crescent City soul, you know what I'm saying? And I love my city, so when I can pay it to my city, that's a big thing. Listen. You remind me of everything in life. That's right, you dig deep like a tiger bite. All the niggas city council fight, cause you deserve more. Then these niggas willing to give you, they immature. Self-absorbed and willing to explore you. I just people from a distance, sideline you. I just people from a distance, sideline you. I just people from a distance, sideline you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your Crescent City soul, it never gets old. Oh, no, 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 no. Yeah.
You got this thing about you. You've been dancing on the floor all night. Do you feel the way I'm feeling, baby? Let's get out of here. Girl, girl, you got this thing about you. You like to wear your jeans real tight. You sexy and I wanna rock you through the stress.
This song got you glowing on the dance floor. So tell me what it's here for.
Some money, a dinner. What college do I need to send her? Tech a year, tech a year. You got me mixing full sail into a dinner, into a dinner. That means I want a bin. And overseas is where I want to tender. FedEx a list, but don't sign it with my heart. I know you used to be a small, but I can change more to oil. And I ain't talking about the gold cars. So to let me pop that trunk and let me put my laser gun in the back. And let it beat against the sack. Cause I don't know how to act when it comes to that. So I'ma let Elion bring the hook back, back, back.
Girl, girl, you got this thing about you. Dancing on the floor all night. Do you feel the way I'm feeling, baby? Let's get out of here. Girl, girl, you got this thing about you. You like to wear your jeans real tight.
That's right.
You sexy and I wanna rock you.
Yeah.
Through the stratosphere.
Yeah, yeah. She's like a stallion at Derby. No other girls walk to her beat. She's thick plus her plate's a perky. Damn, baby girl,
come with me
to a world unknown. Enigma, I'm on it like lumberjack timber. Atmosphere cloudy, snow cap December. And I can't seem to get her up
off her knees. She's aggressive and I like her aggression. And she likes the progression to the sky. We're so high, so high, so high.
Does not know. I'm really spaced out, constantly up in the cosmos. And she make my head spin, cyclone. I think I need to get a grip, python. Way out of control, we both wildin'. Fresh air traffic control to both islands. Lost in each other, lose all sense of timing.
as long as you're smiling. Hey.
Girl, you got this thing about you. You've been dancing on the floor all night. Do you feel the way I'm feeling, baby? Let's get out of here. Girl, you got this thing about you. You like to wear your jeans real tight. You sexy and I wanna rock you through the stratosphere.
Welcome back to today's entrepreneurs, folks.
I'm your co-host, Michael Calloway.
And I'm J.R. Williams.
Now, our next guest is Malcolm Out Loud. And Malcolm Out Loud is a national news and political commentator. And he's been seen on Fox News and CNN. And he's here to discuss the national debt and our economy as it stands and where he would like to see it going. Malcolm, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Good to have you. I've been waiting to get some type of political talk going on the show, or at least some political outlooks and thoughts.
So, Malcolm, talk to us a little bit about the national debt. First of all, how much is it?
Yeah, it changes every hour, really, every minute of every hour. The national debt is hard to follow, and I don't think, most Americans really can't grasp it. We're now talking in trillions of dollars. We no longer talk in millions or billions. It's trillions and gazillions, basically, as the country continues to borrow and spend and borrow and spend. And I think that's the biggest crisis we're facing is the spending spree that Washington is on. We're now talking, we're in excess of $16 trillion. That doesn't take into account Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. When you add in those numbers of responsibilities that we have and in indebtedness, we're speaking of over $200 trillion.
Wow.
You can equal that up amongst each American citizen, and you could suggest that each citizen, even in the lower debt, we each owe $50,000. And when you raise it up to the common numbers, when you include Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, we each owe about $500,000. That's the kind of spending that Washington is on.
And where's most of that spending?
Where's that money going?
Where does it take place?
Yeah, who does it? Who?
Well, you know, let me give you an example. Just 2 days ago, the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, just released again their annual report. You can look it up. And not much different than last year. It's a very sad state of affairs, really. When you see the kind of money, now let's forget, even if you agree or disagree with normal spending habits of Washington on programs and entitlements and bloated government and, you know, just fighting wars and just, they're just making it up as we go. But when you take a look at the report from the GAO, we're talking in this sense, just complete recklessness. We're talking double billing. You remember those stories a few years ago, guys, where they had like the $900 hammers?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? There was a whole hullabaloo some time ago about, you know, it was all just, totally blown up about how Washington, how when they looked at the invoices, there literally were $900 hammers on there. Now, who the hell needs a $900 hammer?
Nobody.
Not unless you're going to bang a politician in the head. I'm not sure you need it, do you?
Yeah, nah. Now, who does America owe all this money to? Or is it spread around?
Well, I mean, there's a combination of things. I mean, there's a lot of it right here in the States. But obviously, you know the talking point. You hear in the media all the time when you hear, the talk of China, of course, the money we owe China. But it's not just China. A lot of countries have invested in America, but a lot of these countries now have, it's become more challenging. And, you know, it's not the same borrowing today, you know, when the AAA credit rate and S&P changed that. And now you're going to see Fitch change that. You're going to see some of the other credit rating agencies begin to downgrade the U.S. ahead. And basically because they've threatened Congress and said if you don't get the spending under control, we're also going to downgrade the credit rating. And so you're going to see more of that ahead. S&P was just the tip of the iceberg, gentlemen.
Now, when you say that, because you're talking in trillions of dollars here and hundreds of trillions, even you said, that would suggest almost to me, do you think that there is a individual that is a trillionaire that has $1 trillion?
No, there's no individual that has $1 trillion. No.
No individual?
No. Okay. Even Warren Buffett doesn't have $1 trillion. You understand?
He has about not even 100 billion, but he's up there.
He's got a few billion. I mean, he's loaded. No, make no mistake about it. He's the guy who continues.
100 billion. I know. He gave Bill Gates about 20 billion.
He's got some billions. I mean, no question. Yeah. But he's also the kind of guy who continues to say, "What we need to tax the rich more." Is that right?
He is.
Well, why the hell doesn't he pay more?
I mean, it seems like a loophole. Just to my understanding, that he's put it out there that they need to bill him more. But I mean, who does he just give money to?
Anybody can pay down the debt. And all these cats who want to run around talking about pay more if you want to pay more. The government, the government goes after enough people with taxes. You know, there are more people in this country that pay their fair share, and there's a large percentage of people who pay nothing.
Definitely right about that. And I mean, speaking of that, and the companies that maybe don't pay and people that don't pay is what they should. How do these oil giants manage to make such huge profits and then they don't pay, the share of taxes? Or do you think that they do pay their share?
That's something I write about all the time. And we did the Out Loud Minute on that this past week with the oil companies. They've had record profits last year, make no mistake about it. I believe offhand, and I don't have it right in front of me, but the Big Five oil companies, we're talking about, it was in excess of $100 billion in combination that these five companies made. It's on my site. You can find it at malcolmoutloud.tv, right on our channel. But the point, when you take a look at that, the problem is, listen, we have a capitalistic society. We don't begrudge anybody to make money. And we're thrilled, whether you're an oil company or Jack's Tire Shop or Mary's Pizzeria. Yeah, God bless you. That's what this country is based on. But the problem is this. In regards to the oil companies, we give them billions of dollars in tax breaks. Exactly. Billions and billions of dollars. And quite frankly, as a conservative myself, a lot of that is endorsed by the Republican Party, which I completely disagree in. I do not believe the oil companies should be getting the tax breaks. Now, the reason they're getting a lot of these tax breaks was to explore for more oil and to put it into alternative products and what have you. Now, that's a double-edged sword because,
You said to put an end to alternative
correct. It's to invest. Yeah. But, when you look at the Obama administration, clearly they're not allowing drilling. We don't drill in, we're a very rich and resourceful country when it comes to energy. But you would never know that.
Resources.
Now, when you say they explore for new territory for drilling, how does that work? Are they looking for unclaimed land where there's... I mean, how can you just...
Well, you have to... It's a permitting process.
What type of deals are made in order to be able to go drill in another country?
It's a permitting process. After the BP oil spill, President Obama had put a lock on all drilling. So there was nothing... you couldn't explore anything further. Everything was shut down. This is part of the problem of why you're having the rise in gas prices right now. We're not aggressive. We continue to want to get it from dictators in Middle East and third world countries and what have you, which we're completely held hostage at, and that's the price we're paying. $4 or $5 is just the tip of the iceberg. I would predict you're going to be paying more like Europe, $6, $7, $8, $9 a gallon shortly ahead. So if you're one of those cats driving around with a big SUV or a big truck, you may want to consider a hybrid shortly, I'll tell you.
Well, what do you think? I mean, with speaking of the BP oil spill, I mean, there you have it that, like you said, we're giving subsidies to these companies, right, to drill, let's say. And then you have the implications that they're using faulty mechanisms, you know, to do the drilling, which seems to be the reason why, you know, the oil spilled in the first place. So do you think we should compromise our, you know, environment and territory for trying to
drill? No, let's do what most Americans want to do. Let's make other countries compromise their environment and then beat the hell out of them when we don't get cheap oil. How's that?
Well, I mean, that's to say, that's why I'm asking you about, what do you think about the alternative energy, you know, as far as, like Brazil, for instance, they've been using, I forget, it's like ethanol, for instance, you know, from corn. Since the oil embargo in the 70s, they got wise to it. I mean, it's just, you know, it's funny to me that we have these talks, you know, about either taking our own resources, you know, and using it. I mean, granted, you know, we're always going to need oil, and there's both sides of it, but I can understand why, you know, some administrations may want to keep it to themselves and not use it maybe right now. Other administrations want to go ahead and drill and, you know, like you said, make things cheaper, you know, and I guess that just gets into another talk of conservation or climate, you know, if just getting off oil altogether. But, you know, just when you spoke about BP, for instance, I know that there's a lot of talk. And right now, I think the trial was supposed to start as far as paying out lawsuits and stuff for people.
Well, they've paid a lot area. Already as far as that goes. Accidents are going to happen. There's no question about it. And whether that, and some people would argue whether that was an accident or not, or just a complete, just a malfunction, or there's still a lot to be said about the BP spill. It's going to happen from time to time. There's no question about it. Okay. But the point is, you know, every 4 years when we have a presidential election is the only time you're going to hear the conversation about alternative energy. In fact, you can always tell a presidential election is coming because you can hear the drum sounds of alternative energy with the media. And you can start to hear the conversation that, in fact, I can remember 2008 with Barack Obama taking office. We're going to become an independent country of oil. We're independent of oil and all these dictators. And shut up. You ain't doing anything of the kind. The politicians lie. Anything to get a seat and gain power, gentlemen.
Well, oil runs the world. So, I mean, for the most part, if you think about it, as far as a resource, would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about this. It's not just what you put in your car or your truck or your SUV to move it along. It runs manufacturing and plastics. It runs the travel industry. Oil is black gold.
So what do you think about alternative methods? Are you for those?
I think we need to have done it a long time ago. And I think the fact that it's strictly a talking point and the American public continues not to hold our politicians accountable makes the American public the fools.
I got you.
Now, Malcolm, let's say, for instance, America gets their oil from Iran. Now, where do other countries get their oil from? Can they go to the same Iran, the same exact place we're getting our oil to get theirs?
Absolutely. Of course. Egypt. Absolutely. In fact, Iran just had, we have sanctions against Iran, of course. And yet Iran just pulled a reverse psychology by stopping the selling of their oil to Europe. And that part of the world, they don't want to sell their oil. And which is, I thought, very funny because it really is using a reverse psychology because the sanctions are prohibiting them from selling oil around the world. But absolutely, you can, these countries sell oil to all over the world. It's not just to the States here.
Well, because they, like you say, there's sanctions on them now from selling to other countries, then obviously we're not going to get oil from them either, correct?
Well, not right now. Nobody. I mean, Iran is being, again, sanctioned. Saudi Arabia, you've got Egypt, you've got, of course, Iraq and Kuwait. Yeah. And, you know, you just come down the spectrum. And this is where most of the oil is coming from. There's a lot to be said about, again, energy in this country. and we have to make decisions. And I think you're going to find that Americans, our lifestyle is going to change over the next decade because oil is going to continue to escalate. It's not going to come down again. The days of cheap gas are long gone, and we're going to have to adjust because families are being unfortunately targeted. We're the pawns in this game. The American people are strictly the pawns in a very wild chess game that our politicians play. And unfortunately, people are being hurt by this. But it's the God's honest truth.
Absolutely. You know, Malcolm, what I heard today that I found very interesting was that how actually the U.S. sells refined oil or already, you know, in a gasoline form to other countries because America is actually decreasing their use in gas. So then we actually have all this refined gas that we are there in turn selling to other countries while in turn we're charging more for the oil at the pump.
You know what you're going to see right now? We have a major stockpile of oil reserves in this country.
Yes.
And of course, the Democrats have been attempting to force President Obama's hand by releasing those reserves these past few months because of the escalation in oil prices.
Yes.
Now, he, of course, has refused to do that thus far. And quite frankly, the oil reserves are strategic for a reason. And they're not to be used casually. However, you're going to see, I'll predict to you gentlemen tonight, that President Obama very soon, I will predict, will release the reserves because the escalation of oil prices continues to rise every day. You go to the pump to fill up. It's another 20 cents more than last week. And what's happening is, you know why he's going to do it, guys?
The election is coming, of course.
It's called poll numbers.
Yeah.
His poll numbers. He's going to do that so the numbers of the tank will come down because he's worried about his poll numbers. He doesn't give a rat's petunia about the next American family who is struggling with filling up their automobile. I'm sorry, but
yeah,
I
can't see them relating to every family. They talk, and like you say, it's all political talk. But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, things
just power. They're after power. And it's both the Republicans and the Democrats alike. Both parties are responsible for the stalemate and the system that we have of just the ineptness of Washington. Both political parties are responsible for that. I mean, you know, conservatives love to blame liberals and liberals love to blame conservatives, right?
Yeah, you're right. It's just a back and forth thing.
Hey, it's all part of the game.
One other thing, Malcolm, like, for instance, back in like 95, I was in Italy. I was in Rome, and I noticed, and you know, that like you said, the prices now are like $6 or $7. Well, I remember back in 95, for instance, that actually the prices of gas, and I think it was a liter, if I'm not mistaken, they work off liters, but like it was about $8 or $9, you know, right. Euros at the time. Which euros are higher than dollars anyway. So, I mean, just to say, and that was what it's 2012 right now, you know, 15 years ago, 17 years ago. So it always struck me odd that, you know, they were so far already. I was struck on why the oil costs so much, you know, to just being over there. Because, you know, it seems like a lot of the it's not even coming over the ocean when you're in Europe right there.
Well, we've gotten used to cheap gas here. We've gotten very used to cheap gas. You know, we build the big car. We love to drive the big cars and big trucks. And,
exactly.
You know, that's the American way. I mean, this is the image that people have of America around the world. Is not so pretty. It's typically one of
we're gluttons.
A society, and really the image is of and I have to be a gentleman here, but just really fat Americans driving our fat cars and our fat attitudes, I'm sorry, but that is really a lot of the opinion that people have, and there are people who would argue that with me, of course, and say that's unfair. But you know what? I've been all over the world, and it's a fact.
That's the beauty of the debate. Well, Malcolm, could you please give our listeners for final parting shots and how to get in contact with you to get more information?
Yeah, very much. You know, our nationally syndicated news magazine is MalcolmOutloud.tv. You'll find it on any computer, of course. if you're not looking for the truth and you want to sugarcoat things, it's probably not the channel you want to come to. Yeah, if you're looking for a phony, you come to the wrong house. That's not my style. You want the truth, you want some point of view that I think is where most Americans are. That's the place. You can catch up with us on Facebook or Twitter, Malcolm Out Loud, you'll find. And we do the Out Loud Minute. You'll find us on radio throughout the country every day with the Out Loud Minute. And again, as a commentator, you'll catch me on radio and television just everywhere.
Well, thank you very much, Malcolm, for coming on the show tonight. We definitely appreciate your thoughts and your input. And, you know, it's very informational for our listeners and something that I think, you know, it has a lot to do with what's going on, and people need to keep it.
Absolutely. We'll do it again. Blessings to you both.
Thank you.
Good night, brother.
Have a good night. That was Malcolm right there.
That was Malcolm Out Loud.
And,
some nice, good political talk.
I mean, you know,
he has some insight on the oil prices and why things are so high and where he sees them going.
You know, it's. I mean, like he said, he'll definitely be debated. You know, but at the end of the day, I think things speak for itself. Actions speak for themselves, and like he said, you know, people have been doing talk for decades now, and you know, and things haven't changed.
Decades,
really.
And you know, it's funny. They always talk about. They never actually say what we should do to generate more income, because they obviously always say things won't never go back down, and they never actually say how we can generate more money to pay for the rising costs.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's just, you know, because things happen so fast. Inflation happens so fast. The market goes up and down so fast. Look, one bank collapses and, you know, and things just, everything shoots up. I mean, in literally a day or two. You know, they're talking about affecting billions of people in a matter of a day or two because a country may have defaulted on a loan they have, maybe a major, you know, natural disaster came about, you know. So it's just, I mean, it's amazing.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, our next guest is a fitness instructor, and he's 3-time pro wrestling champion Diamond Dallas Page. Diamond Dallas Page, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, you can call me DDP for short.
DDP, that sounds like Ludacris's company.
I clearly remember you growing up, and the Diamond Cutter was infamous.
Okay.
Now, give us a brief rundown of your background as a wrestler.
Well, for starters, I didn't start wrestling until I was 35. My career didn't take off until I was 40, which was 1996. And, you know, my wrestling took off crazy at the time. It was, if you look at the ratings, which everybody looks at today, if you took the top 10 rated shows on cable television, 5 of them would have been either WCW or the WWF. And we were in that top slot all through 97 and 98. And I was living the dream at a whole different level. I mean, I was the anomaly. Everyone said, you're never going to be able to do it, starting wrestling at 35 and a half. But a lot of people didn't take into consideration my work ethic, my drive, tenacity, and the willingness to be flexible, not just, you know, in the body, but in the mind, and be willing to try different things, like icing my body. I was the first guy to ice his body in professional wrestling. I was always on the quest.
What does ice your body mean? Yes.
Okay. Whenever you get hurt, anytime you have, you know, you're lifting weights or you're running and your knees hurt, the first thing you should do is ice your knees. Wherever you feel that discomfort.
You're speaking literally.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Exactly. Really, like getting a tub of ice, perhaps that type of.
That's the highest level. But if you just get one of those blue ice bags that you can get at Walgreens, fill it up with ice, it looks like a hot water bottle, and put it on your knees, and then wrap, you know, ace bandages around it, you can walk around with them like that, and you're icing and cooling down your knees. I don't know if you know this, but when the NBA invests millions of dollars in these young studs who come into the NBA. If they're 18, 19, 20, it doesn't matter. When they're done with practice, they must ice their knees. Now, do you really think those guys think they need it? Of course they don't. But the guys who are 27, 28 are like, dude, ice my knees before I get out of here. It's all about pulling down the inflammation. it's all about holding back the hands of time so maybe they can, you know, play this unbelievable game into their 30s. You know, and you know, when you look at a basketball player like Kobe, I think he's 31 or 32 now. He's an old man. You know, he's 17 at the highest
years
win.
In. Yeah.
Right. I mean, oh my gosh. What do you look at Magic, the way Magic moves. Okay? You'll see him hobble around, his knees back. You know, I just watched a whole thing on Larry Bird and Magic, which if you haven't seen that on HBO, you gotta see it. It's amazing. But Bird was so banged up, back, ankles, you know, his knees. And if he would have been doing my workout, which is what I did, once I hit the top of my game at the end of 98, I ruptured my L4 and L5 so badly that three doctors said that my wrestling career was over. Now, I just signed a multi-million-dollar deal. You said it earlier that the diamond cutter was infamous. I mean, yeah. People called it the murder move. You got hit with that, baby. It was lights out. And, you know, it was like living the dream at a whole different level, getting to wrestle with guys like Karl Malone and Dennis Rodman and Hulk Hogan in the main event. Yeah. You know, I just can't even explain what that was like. It was just like so over the top to come where I had come from. And then for the doctors to say, you know, D, you had a hell of a run, but you're done. And, you know, it just didn't sit with me, so I kept doing the rehab, not really getting anywhere. And I was married at the time, and my wife was like, why don't you try doing yoga to heal your body? And I do, yeah. Guys. I looked at her like, yoga?
Yeah.
Not happening. You know, the first 42 years of my life, I'm a guy who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga.
Backwards dog.
Dude, I get it. But you want to know something? Greatest workout ever when it comes to healing your body. So I mixed it up. I developed a workout for myself that was for people who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga. So I started to take those yoga positions and work them in with my rehab that I've learned. I've had two shoulder surgeries, two blown out rotator cuffs. I've had two meniscus tears, a cartilage tear in my knees. I've blown out my back. I've blown out my neck. And I have rehabbed every single injury through mixing rehab with yoga, with old school calisthenics, mixed in with something that I call dynamic resistance. And what that is, it's like a bodybuilder. They're acting when you're engaging your muscles as you move from one position to another. What happens is your heart has to beat faster to get the blood to the muscle. Hence, you get in the fat burning zone standing still. I'm talking about zero impact, kick-ass cardio. It will dramatically increase your flexibility and core strength conditioning. In less than 3 months, guys, I was back in the ring. At 42, they said my career was over. At 43, I was a heavyweight champion of the world.
Wow.
Now, what were some of your daily workouts like using that regimen?
Well, it started out very, very, very slowly. And, you know, I started doing that yoga tape. And after 3 weeks, I could feel a significant difference. So I grabbed some of those, you know, moves. And I would just, in my own bedroom, you know, get a big bedroom, big floor there. And I just start doing my rehab stuff. I go, wow, what if I just mix this with this? So I take that rehab move into a yoga position, from a yoga position back into a rehab move into a calisthenic, because, you know, push-ups are awesome for your whole body if you engage every muscle. And I couldn't do a push-up because my back was so blown out. So I lowered to my knees like a girl. And in yoga, they just lower down. They do a thing called Cobra in the Down Dog, which I'm not sure if that was J.R. Michaels busting chops on that. But awesome stretch for your hamstrings, your back of your knees, your Achilles, your shoulders. I mean, it's an amazing stretch and strengthen. And what I would do is instead of lower straight down, I lowered 3, 2, 1, held 3 inches off the ground, 3, 2, 1. Then I'd push up, 3, 2, 1, come down, 3, 2, 2, hold 3, 2, 2, then go to Cobra to Down Dog. Eventually, I got off my knees. Eventually, 3-second push-ups became 5-second push-ups. 5-second became 10-second. 10-second became sets of 10-second. Next thing I know, I am getting stronger and stronger and stronger and flexible and feeling better. And when I went back to the doctors, because I had to get, you know, I had to get released before they would let me come back to work. And when he saw me after 3 months, he said, Diamond, I have never seen a recovery like this ever. What did you do? And I really didn't really know. I knew how to explain it to myself, but I didn't really know how to explain it to anybody else. But as time went on, this is 13 years ago, you know, I just kept working and working and working. What happened was this became part of my practice. I still lifted weights while I was in the ring. But the day I got out of the ring, which was about 10 bow, the day I got out of the ring in the big show, which is like the WWE, that's the big show. When I got out of the ring there, I stopped lifting weights. And I have, you know, I go to the gym once every month or two to see where my strength's at. And I was only doing the low reps, I should say high reps, low weight at that time. My strength is so much on tap for where I was. But now I use no impact. And that's a huge thing for guys who are athletes who are especially over 30 years old, 30, 35, 40. Your body gets so beat up from back when you were doing that crazy stuff when you were a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, were you guys athletes growing up?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Varsity Letterman and things like that. Now, are these workouts on a DVD? Is this something that people can purchase and follow along?
Absolutely. I developed a program, and I have 10 different DVDs, and you can get it as a six-pack as well for people who, you know, just want to try it. When people say, what should I do? First of all, they're already at ddpyoga.com, and I want to make sure we talk about that disabled veteran, because I don't think you guys saw the video of the disabled veteran that I helped walk again, lost 130 pounds in 10 months. And this workout's not a weight loss program. It's just an awesome side effect. And, you know, if you take any kind of prescription medicine, they tell you how great it is the first 15 seconds. And the next 15 seconds, they tell you how bad it is and all things it can do to you.
We trip off for every infomercial I see for the pharmaceutical companies about that.
Criminal. It's literally, I heard you guys talking about the gasoline. It's as criminal as the gasoline. But I don't, let's not go on to that rant. Because I could have jumped right in and tacked that guy up on everything. But, you know, what I did is, when people say, what should I do? I said, if you want to try DDP yoga, and by the way, it's tagged with, it ain't your mama's yoga. You know, no pumping kick. Spiritual mumbo jumbo, man. It's a workout, and you can do it at any level. So I say, if you just want to try DDP yoga, just get the introductory, you know, level one pack. If you're serious and you want to own your life, and so many people have given in to, you know, just doing nothing. And if you do nothing, your body, you know, especially sitting at a computer, it's like you might as well be wrestling the big show every night. Because that hunched over feeling, your physiology changes. You're like my hand on my mouse pad. I went to my left hand because my right hand was going numb when I was sleeping. But as soon as I switched it over to my left hand, no more numb arm when I'm sleeping. How funny is that? I mean, the damn computer is a criminal.
Yes.
You know,
no,
for
your
body.
It's made carpal tunnel, you know.
All that, especially if you beat up your body. And, you know, people can say what they want about professional wrestling. You can't fake gravity.
DDP is how has this type of yoga helped you sustain injuries from the suffered in the ring? And could any athlete that sustains an injury use this yoga, or is it specifically for wrestlers? Or
I get it. Well, let's just talk about one wrestler right now. You guys remember Chris Jericho is, right?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, one of the biggest stars in the world. He's been on, you know, he had his own rock band. He had his own game show. He was dancing with the stars, you know. And he blew his L4 out about a year ago. And every doctor said he was done, just like me. When I showed him that video I told you guys about, the disabled veteran who was walking on canes for 15 years, when he watched him get up and fall down and get up and fall down and fall down and then stop falling down and then get stronger and leaner and stronger and more flexible. And when he saw the guy at the end of the video who starts out walking on canes, he walked on canes for 15 years. At the end of the video, when he saw him not only walking without the canes but running, he called me up. He said, D, send me the DDP yoga now.
Now, 3 weeks later, gotta give it a shot.
3 weeks later, no, this is up on my site. 3 weeks later, he sends me a text saying, "Dude, I don't know how this is doing this, but I'm 85% pain free. I am addicted to it." And 3 months later, 95% pain free, he is wrestling in the main event against CM Punk at WrestleMania. It doesn't get any bigger than that.
Wow.
Now, Chris has turned on, a bunch of the boys, onto it. Because when I was doing it, again, sort of a joke, DDP doing some kind of yoga. It's not yoga, but it's yoga. Bust my chops. But all of a sudden, Chris Jericho goes, "Hey, this works."
Now you got co-signed by a big man.
Yeah, exactly. I got backed up. The Big Red Machine, Kane, 6'8", 300 pounds, loving it. Santino, Mick Foley. I never thought he'd stick with it, but he is. He was just in the UK putting it over. And I can't afford any of these guys, especially Jericho. He's a $1 million guy,
Exactly.
I can't afford him. He's just telling people because he knows it's what it's going to do for them. Now, you guys follow football? He was a great college player. He hasn't shined yet because he just was a rookie last year. But you know who DeAndre Reed is? He used to play for Arizona. Now he's playing for Michigan. Minnesota. Well, whatever. He's a great defensive end. Watch him. He's 6'5", 265. He is a stud. I just worked out with him about 3 weeks ago, and he loved it. Him and his dad. And his dad's a damn warrior, too. But Derek Brooks, you remember him, 11-time All-Pro linebacker for Tampa Bay. He did my workout the last 5 years of his career and was an All-Pro his last year at 35. And he still does my workout today because, again, no impact, zero impact. It will give you a kick-ass cardiovascular workout while you're increasing your flexibility dramatically and building your core strength. If you want to see what I can do and you're listening right now, go to ddpyoga.com and go to the bottom of that front page. You'll see Jericho right above me, and you'll see that disabled veterans video. That'll blow you away. Mm-hmm. But if you want to see where I'm at today at 55 years young, when you see me, I show myself getting my ass whooped, WCW and WWF, just taking crazy bumps. In my 40s, I put 42, 46 years old, and then I'd show 55 years young. When you see what I'm doing with my body, you'll be going, "How's that possible?"
Can't believe it. How long have you been doing this?
Now, 13 years. What's really amazing to me is that still today, I just started doing these 6, maybe 7 months ago, and they're called superhero push-ups, where you walk your arms straight out in front of you, and your feet are all the way back. So now you're literally like Superman. Now you lower your body. I lower to 1 inch off the ground. Then I lift up 4 inches, lower back down. Lift up 4 inches, lower back down. So I did that for about a month, and I was like, wow, I'm getting stronger and stronger and stronger. So I thought, let me see if I lift all the way down, lift my hands off the ground and my feet off the ground with my arms completely straight. Can I pick my body off? Yes, I can. I just did 18 of them last week at the beach, but I got a video up on DDPTV.com of me doing 13 of them.
Wow.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Diamond Dallas Page, 3-time pro wrestling champion. Briefly, before we get out of here, just one last question. I was watching a special the other day on wrestling and on the NWO. Can you tell me the impact that the NWO had on the business aspect of wrestling?
It changed the business. I mean, because when Nash and Hall came over, it was like boom, boom. They left the WWF and showed up on our TV. And people were like, "Oh my God, Vince must be doing an angle with Turner. Or this is real. They're coming in and taking over." It suspended belief. And then when they kept saying, "Our three guys are going to, we're going to come here. You get your best three guys and we'll meet at the pay-per-view at Bash at the Beach." And when it turned out to be Hogan, I mean, they got so many, Turner Broadcasting got so many, aggravated parents calling because you just turned Santa Claus. And, it really broke up a lot of people. And his whole attitude was like, "Hey, I'm all about the NWO right now. And but he, Hulk needed that change. He needed that flip, and it resurged his career crazy. And they just killed everybody. What was really interesting for me at the time, Scott Hall, I helped him create that look back when he was Scott Hall with the blonde hair and the walrus mustache, and I helped bring him in as the Diamond Stud when I was a manager years before. And then he took that gimmick and went to Vince and became Razor Ramon. So when he came back, I was his manager at one time, and I got him the job when nobody else would hire him. I talked to Dusty about it, created his look, brought him in. He was my friend. He knew he owed me, and he wanted to repay me. And Kevin Nash used to be my tag team partner, and he was going to quit the business, and I talked him out of it before he went to the WWF and became a world champion, huge star. So those two guys coming in, they were my friends. So they were killing everybody but me. And I came up with this angle where they come to me and ask me to be part of the NWO, and I was like, no. No one says no to them. And then we shot this angle where I dropped them, and nobody had knocked them down. Nobody had dropped them. They'd been there for 9 months, and I was the first guy to drop them and take a credit. You know, the place went crazy. It was 33,000 people. So I was, my feud with the NWO was pivotal. You know, it was great for me, but it was great for wrestling.
Well, I'm on your site right now, and just to let the listeners know, and you know, I see you have a very interactive site here. I like how it's broke down. You have the DDP TV on YouTube, and the big stamp NH Your Mama's Yoga, which I'm loving. I see you got a lot of videos up here as well. So just so you know, our viewers know, DDP. Is that .com or
DDP Yoga? DDP.
Oh,
you
DDP
might be
at Yoga.
You might be at Dolph, but yeah. DDP
I went
yoga.
To Google. That's why it gave me.
Okay.
All right. DDPYoga.com. That's right.
Right.
I see you got a few videos up here. I was watching the big guy do some. I think that's Arthur's Journey.
Right. Yeah. Pretty crazy, huh?
Very, very good stuff.
Yeah. Now, Diamond, can you just give your final parting shots and contact information for our listeners?
Absolutely. If you go to DDPYoga.com, and it's all there, all the videos I talked about. I make it really user-friendly. You were just saying, if you go to the store, you'll see I have different deals. And the reason why I call it DDP Yoga is because my YRG workouts were yoga for regular guys, and I have my DDP Extreme, and I put right there, if you're a couch potato, or if you're someone who, you know, works out occasionally, get off this page right now and go back to the YRG, one of my pack ones or pack twos, and you can get the program there. And we have a very amazing community called TeamDDPYoga.com, where we have the greatest support system on the planet. And I challenge anyone to go there and tell me it's not, because the people, nobody's paid to work there. There are people that come there looking for inspiration, and the ones who work it and actually become part of the community become the biggest inspiration. So, and I'm also let you know, for people who are listening who want to bring me in for seminars or workshops, whether it's a dojo or a yoga studio or whatever, you know, I come in for all that. You can find that on Do the Work app. So, I'm traveling all around the world, you know, around the country, around the world right now, you know, promoting DDP Yoga, and we've got a huge following in over in Europe as well as here in the States. So it's really kicking off, and I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
Really quick, you mentioned doing seminars. I mean, you do, for instance, like when you come to like a company, let's say, that's
absolutely
trying to put into effect something like that. Me and a good friend were talking about that the other day, how some companies have like even these conceptual theories, for instance, like where people are on treadmills, but they have the screen, you know, the tablet in front of them, and you know, just a way to not sit around all day and stuff. But as you mentioned, you know, doing seminars, I think that's, you know, a great thing to some companies that are looking into that. So is that's something
I think they need to. I think they need to, especially with the health and fitness today. When they talk about childhood obesity, it's not the kids, it's the adults. And right. You see, 85% of all adults who are obese is 50 pounds or over. That's what I think they just made it 60. So people, we have less obesity, but it's 72% in our country. It is not the kids. It's the adult who feed the kids. If you go back to your guys' great grandparents, there was nobody that was 20 pounds overweight or more.
Definitely wasn't. I was talking with my wife tonight about that, how it's just, you have food available to you. And, instant gratification all the time.
And garbage. And processed foods. You know, processed foods is what it's all about. And everybody, you can get that macaroni and Kraft macaroni and cheese. Man, you couldn't pay me to eat that today. You know, I'll eat nothing. I will never go to, after I saw and what really McDonald's and all those, that's not food. You know, it's garbage. I won't even call it junk food. I'll call it junk garbage. You know, and the more people, they got to stop thinking that it's food because it's not. And your body doesn't know how to metabolize that garbage. That's why it lays in your stomach and builds and builds and builds, and you get huge.
Now, once again, this was Diamond Dallas Page. We just want to thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate it, and we want to wish you the best success.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on. Have a great night.
You too. Wow, ladies and gentlemen, that's a three-time wrestling champion, Diamond Dallas Page.
Excellent show tonight, folks.
Another good show under the belt.
A lot of different diverse information from our guests. You know, we're talking about oil prices to DDP yoga, you know, stay fit and, you know, and just the 50s, the new 40 and so on and so on, you know, 60s, the new 50.
It's funny because I actually seen something online today where they were saying a 70-year-old woman, I think from Georgia, if I'm not mistaken, found the fountain of youth. I didn't actually get into the details and see what they were talking about and what she had going on, but it's just falls right in line of what he's talking about and what we've been talking about as of late. And we just want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll see you on Friday.
Guys,
today's Entrepreneurs Radio Show.
Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to today's Entrepreneurs Radio Show. I'm your co-host, J.R. Williams, alongside Michael Calloway. We appreciate you tuning in tonight and hope that you enjoyed the show. Until next time, please keep a successful state of mind and keep the creativity brewing.